Hello, everyone. Welcome to the MOOC Debate Club. This session is a little bit unique. It's going to be largely a discussion with the panel in the front of the room. No slides or anything, so you're not missing anything if you're not seeing any visuals. And we have some people here who have significant MOOC experience, and by significant, I mean like a year, because there's not much more than that. So they'll introduce themselves. I'll start off with a question, and then we'll take questions from the audience and from the people participating online. So if you want to start on the left, my left, stage my left.
Okay, sure. I'm Seth Anderson.
I'm Hayato.
And we're academic technology consultants at Duke University, and we're sort of on the panel today because we can provide a little bit of experience working with faculty and students who actually use the MOOCs. So. Sorry, is that not working? Can you not hear us? Is that better? A little closer?
Yeah.
Okay. Me or the mic?
or you guys can pass the handle.
Oh, okay. Why don't we do that then? I'll start over. All right. I'm Seth Anderson, and
Hi, I'm Hayato.
Right, we're like connected at the hip, that's why I said that. We're academic technology consultants at Duke University, and we're on the panel today because we work directly with faculty sort of doing pedagogical consulting. We got a lot of information about what it's like from a faculty perspective to work in the MOOCs and some information about student experiences as well. So that's what we're going to hopefully bring to the panel today.
Hi, I'm Amy Collier. I'm the Director for Technology and Teaching for the Office of the Vice Provost for Online Learning at Stanford. And we're doing a lot with MOOCs, but we're also doing a lot with online learning in general. So we have a kind of a wider initiative called Stanford Online, and it's a focus on online, blended, and, you know, some occasionally a MOOC here and there. So,
thanks. Hi, I'm Cassandra Hori. I'm Director of Teaching and Learning Programs at the California Institute of Technology. And my colleague will tell you more about what Caltech is doing, but we have a hashtag for this session. It is hashtag MOOC Club, all one word. So if you can tweet using that, if you're tweeting, that would be great. And we will be expecting and hoping for not only questions from you, but comments and discussion as well.
And I'm Leslie Maxfield. I'm the Director of Academic Media Technologies at Caltech. And starting in March last year, we launched our own MOOC at Caltech. And then a month later, in the summer after that, we then started with Coursera. So we have experience with four MOOC courses.
Okay, so just to kick things off, this is a general question for the panel. What, in your opinions, is the MOOC best suited for?
Don't all jump at the microphone. All right, well, I don't think any of us really know. I certainly don't, but one thing that I've noticed from the MOOC debates and discussions going on is really just this large-scale questioning of the purposes and pedagogies and pathways of higher education. So to see many people sharing online experiences, shopping around, and really asking, are there better ways to do this, I think is certainly one best, if there are any, coming out of the MOOCs.
I'll just briefly second that. I think that one of the really cool things that's come out of the MOOCs at Stanford is that you walk through the halls in some of the Stanford buildings and you'll hear faculty talking about teaching. And that's a really cool development. And so I think that's a huge plus for the MOOC movement, if you will. I also think that we are learning a lot about how to do things at scale, how to bring communities of learners together across not just a university, but across many universities, across the entire globe, people who are not enrolled with people who are enrolled at universities. And that's a really interesting way of thinking about learning as community building.
I think that the MOOCs are built on efficiency of teaching for a larger scale of learners. So they are suited for the allow faculty to teach more than just a few dozen students at a time. So they're forming like a learning community, have a flexibility in terms of scheduling and the credential matters. A MOOC through opens the door of the professor's classroom to reach otherwise they cannot reach in their whole time, entire life.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of we've had the discussion recently that there's a lot of barriers that some people have to taking a class, say, for example, at Duke University. For example, they've not been admitted to Duke University. They don't have the money for Duke University. They've not, they're a stay-at-home mom. It's not an option, or any of these universities. I just use Duke because that's where I sit every day, right? So, but MOOCs allow people to overcome those barriers in a lot of ways. You know, someone who may not be able to afford actually taking a class at an institution of higher education can just jump right into a MOOC. Take a look at what's happening, you know, get the same sort of actual experience with an instructor that they would get in the classroom, in the sense that they're getting the knowledge and the content, and more interaction than I think people think actually takes place in a MOOC. That's something I hope comes out today, is that there's this sense that you know, a MOOC is throwing videos up somewhere and having students look at it and just kind of forgetting about it. But that's really not the case. There's a lot more interaction than I think people give them credit for that takes place in there. So. Yeah, sort of allowing boundaries to be broken is one thing that MOOCs are really, really good at. So.
Okay, I have another question. Whenever I've been talking to faculty, administrators, students about MOOCs, a lot of times they're wondering how is this going to benefit or how is this going to hurt the traditional education. So a student came into my office, she interviewed me about MOOCs, and she said, I'm paying tuition dollars for this. Is the MOOC going to be considered the same as me? Are people being distracted from the mission of the university by doing MOOCs instead of focusing on resident instruction students? So in your opinion, what is the kind of value proposition for MOOCs in higher education?
Oh, good. Yay. Okay. Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I've actually heard, you know, students at Stanford articulate some of the same questions. Are we giving away the secret sauce of what happens at Stanford? And, you know, it's a legitimate question, and I think we need to think about the ways that we address. I think there's an interesting opportunity for MOOCs to actually improve residential education. And as we continue to explore those possibilities, I think students will start to change the way they think about MOOCs, hopefully, and administrators too, to think about the opportunities that, you know, if maybe if you use a MOOC for a flipped class, which a lot of our faculty are doing, right, where the MOOC is actually mostly just the content that they've created for their flipped class put up online for other people to use as maybe OER or just, you know, for their own self-motivated learning. As we start to see that what can happen in the classroom as a result of that can be actually a richer learning experience than what happened before, I think the value proposition does improve.
I was going to add to that as well by saying that if you look at it in a number of different sort of perspectives, like say, for example, a student joins a MOOC class or actually takes a class in a MOOC before he takes it in his own brick-and-mortar institution, he gets an opportunity to see, for example, if that's going to be the kind of class that he wants. Is it going to be successful in it? He even has a leg up because he's getting the material ahead of time before he has to sort of, you know, do it for credit. So there's a little bit of a low-risk opportunity to go and see, how am I going to do in this class? So in some sense, it sort of helps a student potentially maybe, you know, in terms of level of success once he actually takes the class in that particular and brick-and-mortar instance. Something else from the other side, looking at it from an instructional technology perspective, is we have a lot of instructors who say they're never going to teach their brick-and-mortar class the same way again after they've taught a class in a MOOC. And the interesting thing about it is, and I think we sort of mentioned this a little bit, and it came up even during the Horizon Report reveal the other day, is that it's forcing the instructors that are teaching these classes to think about education as a process. They're not just standing up there and spouting out information about the topic that they're teaching on. They're actually thinking about how to organize their courses. They're thinking about learning objectives. They're thinking about all the things that make all of us educational technology people just quiver with excitement. And that's not something that you know, typically comes naturally. So there's some value to the way that they're going to be teaching these courses face-to-face as well. So I don't think it's necessarily taking anything away from the students that are at these institutions.
Some of the faculty said their experience teaching the MOOC really help them to rethink their classroom experience with teaching their students. Because they said when tons of thousands of people go over their lectures, so according to our data, like 10% of the learners, MOOC learners, they are actually the professionals. They are either a professor or professors or teachers. They just wanted to get the ideas what is the other faculty members' teaching experience. So in this case, a lot of experts in the MOOC course, they look at their lecture, provide very good feedback, very good questions. They point out, they find and report a lot of errors, misstatement, and something, and really help the faculty member bring this to make a change to the real classroom, to which is very beneficial to on-campus students.
Yeah, so at Caltech, our classes are very small. It can be 6 students to at most 200 students. And to have a class that has 68,000 students enrolled, maybe 5 to 10,000 students that are engaged regularly, the questions that are asked are great discussions and learning opportunities for our Caltech students and also for our TAs who get engaged. They're challenged by these Coursera or MOOC audience students who are asking questions. So it's both for the Caltech students, for our Caltech TAs and our faculty, as well as the other side. So there's a lot of learning going on.
And then just bringing it back to the Horizon Report reveal, once again, you know, we talked a lot in that session about, not we, but other people talked a lot about the makerspace and this kind of free exploration and sense of lifelong learning. And our students are being asked to kind of up the ante by interacting with people who are there to learn cosmology or economics or learning from data, machine learning, or about neuroscience and pharmacology from this group of people globally who are treasuring the opportunity and who are truly delighted and engaged by being part of that class. And so I think that kind of opening of the university doors for our students, of the porosity of the membrane, is modeling for them some behaviors that, as traditional college students on a residential campus, they might not otherwise be as exposed to. And we want them to be team players. We want them to be able to interact and be self-motivated for the long term.
Okay, I have a question from the online audience. David Springer is asking, devil's advocate, what have you really disliked about working with MOOCs so far? And I can rephrase if you don't want to.
I think MOOC changes so fast. What we learned today is much different from tomorrow. So...
Yeah, I don't think it's a dislike thing as much as it is probably one of the biggest challenges is it's like light speed. You know, like we were saying early this afternoon in the session that we did. see, time goes at light speed. I have no idea what time of day it is even. You know, we started our relationship with Coursera in July, and it feels like it's been forever. And it's like, my gosh, it's only February, beginning of February, right? So things move really fast, and it's a challenge to kind of keep up. It takes a lot of resources to keep up with something that's moving at light speed like this. So
MOOC, I mean, the Coursera has been 9 months, but they keep adding the new tools according to the audience feedback. So we have to keep learning.
One of our professors at Stanford recently said at a faculty panel about the topic of online and blended learning that she felt like the MOOC was like this giant cruise ship. Whereas when she taught, you know, kind of in her classes, her project-based classes, that she could kind of surf the waves of what her students were talking about, thinking about what was important to them, what the context of that particular course was. She felt like this MOOC thing, as she taught, she felt like she was just navigating in a giant cruise ship and that she could see the icebergs coming and there was absolutely no way to avoid them. And she knew she was going to hit them, and she had to deal with that. And I think that one of the things that we see, it's both kind of a strength and something negative about the MOOCs, is that... negativity gets amplified when you have thousands and thousands of people in one space, right? So a lot of times, especially in some of these MOOCs, people feel like they're anonymous because sometimes they can post anonymously. And so you do get kind of a trend of very negative kinds of interactions among students about the professor or with the professor or with the TA. And that can be, on the one hand, very jarring and very difficult for the professor to deal with. On the other hand, a lot of times the professors are saying, wow, you know, when 10% of my class, my Stanford class, told me that I was a bad, you know, lecturer or, you know, XYZ, whatever it was, I didn't really listen. But when 10% of my 60,000-person MOOC tells me that I'm not a great lecturer or whatever it is, I suddenly start paying attention. So it's both kind of a positive and a negative there.
And this is another that's not so much a dislike, but a little reveal of some of the deep questioning and turmoil that's maybe happening on some of our campuses that doesn't always come out. There's a lot of real introspection and difficult conversations happening among faculty and leadership about what are we doing? Why are we doing this? What does a certificate mean? What are we really sending out to students? And I see head nods there. And that's not a downside. It's really good for us to be questioning who we are, what we do, and why. But it's not easy, and it's certainly time-consuming and challenging.
Okay. If there's any questions from the room, please walk up to the mic. I have another one from the Twitter stream this time, so it's a good thing we have our own hashtag for that. Do MOOCs beyond openness have an implicit ideology, would you say? Stump the panel.
I guess we talk a lot about the notion of the C MOOC, the connectivist MOOC, and the X MOOC, the institutional MOOC. And hopefully what I'm hoping that we're seeing is more of those coming together, that we're learning lessons from each other about, connecting people together, that the connectivist MOOCs really taught us, and the notions of scale that the C MOOCs have taught us about connecting people, the X MOOCs have kind of taught us about scale. So hopefully we're starting to actually bring those together a little bit. But I would say that one of the implicit ideologies might be the idea of people to the power of people, right? That as you have more and more people in the same space interacting about topics, the possibility of rich interactions, the possibility of the types of interactions that maybe could never happen if you're just keeping everything within your classroom walls. I think that connectedness, that connected learning piece is one of the implicit, hopefully, things of our MOOCs.
I would just say also, going along with that, it's interesting to hear the faculty members that have been through the experience of teaching one of these talk, which we actually make them do. Not make them do, they're very happy to do so, but we meet with all of our faculty that are working on MOOCs once every couple of weeks, get them in the same room, they can share what's going on, things like that. One of the most interesting things to hear is that they talk a lot about the wisdom of the crowd, and they mean their students in this sense, which is great because that's the way you should look at a classroom like this, I think. One thing they say is how surprised they were that their students catch things that they're not necessarily correct about. And it's like, wow, that's an interesting thing to hear a faculty member say about an experience in a class, right? But they say that when you get such a large number of students involved and connected into this learning experience, they actually help them tweak the material that these instructors have been teaching over for years and years and years and years. So there's that notion of connectedness and sort of, again, the wisdom of the crowd. And again, that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where this is having a serious effect on the way that they're teaching from day to day in their normal classes. That's certainly so. I think that connected nature, considering that's one of the big overarching themes of this whole conference, that's probably a good thing, right? So,
in terms of the people connected, faculty said people in the class become friends in the discussing forum, and the faculty feel like many of them are there. Faculty's friends too, and they have the connector, and then some MOOC students ask a faculty for their opinion, their future career, get their advice.
I was going to say, just real quick, if none of you have actually logged into a MOOC, that's kind of one of our big themes, I think, is we should all be talking about probably, is there's a lot of misconceptions about what happens inside these classes. And people say, well, I signed up for it, I watched a couple of videos, and it's not for me. Well, that's not really what happens. You really need to be a part of the entire learning experience. And the people who stay in for the whole thing really probably do get the most out of it, I would say. But one thing that's really fun is if you do want to log in and just look at a couple things, go in toward the end of one of these classes and look at the I Love Professor X threads that happen. I'm sure you guys get those in all those classes that you have in different platforms as well. But the instructors get a lot of love from the students who are actually involved in these classes. In particular, that happens, and the level of, I would say, interaction that the instructor has directly with the students probably varies from class to class. But in those classes where the instructor goes in and does a little bit of interaction with the students in the forums and talks to them directly, it really makes the students who are involved in these classes feel like, okay, I'm a member of this class. I have the instructor's attention. I can ask questions. I can get answers. And at the end of the semester, you see it because they all write back and they say, wow, I never would have been able to take, you know, this sort of Ivy League level class. And here I am, and the instructor knows my name and has listened to what I've had to say, and I've contributed to this discussion. It's awesome. Super cool. So
it seems like a lot of what you're talking about is changes in teaching practice. And, of course, that wouldn't really require a MOOC. But I think putting the MOOC structure, you know, onto the faculty member, so to speak, forces them to really look at their teaching practice and change. And I'm wondering if that has an effect on when they go back to their face-to-face classes, or do they go back and use their old style where they may not necessarily know if the class understands or is following or engaged?
So I don't think we can answer that yet because we haven't seen them really go back to the classroom. They're in the midst of it. It's, you know, it's just happened or happening. Yeah, but and so your comment in response was, let's see if I can capture it quickly, just that how interesting it is to think about changing practice at our universities. And so what are the early reports like? Well, some of the early reports are coming from not so much having the faculty be forced to take this on. All of our faculty have done MOOCs because they have wanted to. They've each really come with their own unique goals, whether it is to reach a large audience with a particular scientific message or perspective that they feel is important to the field, to reach a set of students they otherwise wouldn't, to try something new in their classes. So those who are flipping the classroom have said they're absolutely going to teach their courses differently and are already planning how that will unfold for them. But on the flip side, because we've kind of been able to follow the lead of people who are interested in teaching in a new way, in a completely unforced fashion, we've now had them come back. I had a faculty member send me Bloom's taxonomy the other day as something that was new and, you know, part of this process that had come through the forum in one of the courses. Had I brought that to the initial discussion, probably wouldn't have had as much of an impact, but because it's come through an authentic, self-motivated process, which we know is important in any kind of learning, I think it's really going to stick.
And I just want to add to that, I don't think that's unique to MOOCs. I think because, you know, we've been doing faculty development for online teaching for a long time, right? And I would say that the most momentum I've ever had with a faculty member around their teaching has been when they've suddenly decided or they've been told that they need to teach online. And then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, it might be the first time they've actually thought about their teaching ever. And so that's, I think it's both an opportunity that online learning in general provides. I think the MOOCs make it a little more poignant to some faculty because of the sheer numbers, right? But I think mostly online teaching and learning has been helping faculty developers for a long time.
I would say, too, that I think something else is really interesting. Sorry, then we'll move on. But not just the numbers themselves, but the range of people who sign up for these classes, not just in terms of age, but in terms of experience and things like that. You know, there are folks who are aged, I think we in one class we had someone who was 11 and someone who was 86 or something like that, which is interesting just numerically, right? But it's also interesting because you think, all right, well, what perspectives are these people bringing to the class that the instructor is actually sort of paying attention to and getting new information about? A lot of the people who are in these classes are experts in the field who want to connect with other people who are interested in what they're talking about, right? And that may include the instructor. So there's got to be some inherent changes. So it's not necessarily just the number and spreading it out. You know, a typical online class is still usually someone who's enrolled in an institution of higher education who's looking for credit at their school through another class, right, or through a class that they can't reach physically. You know, there is sort of that sense of what are we going to do credential-wise. But the truth is, this is still just an awesome experiment, a great lab. People are signing up because they want to learn more about the topic. They tell us that. It's like, I don't really care about your credential and your certificate. It's great if I can get that. I can hang it on my wall and feel great about myself. But the truth is, I just want to learn. And the interaction they're having with the other people in the class and the instructor has got to be changing the way that these things are actually, the courses in a face-to-face environment are actually happening. It just makes sense to think that way because you're bringing in a completely different audience with a variety of different perspectives. So, okay.
I'll take a question from the room here, and then the gloves have come off a little bit in the Twitter stream, so I'll jump into that next. Actually, you've been warned.
Actually, following up on that last comment from Duke, as a matter of fact, on the nature of the interaction, can you say a little bit more about with an ex-MOOC where you have tens of thousands of people, what type of interaction, what's the nature of the interaction that you see peer-to-peer with the students or with students in the extended audience versus resident? And between faculty and students. Can you describe a little bit about the richness of what's going on there?
Well, I guess I'll talk about that since it was, I guess that's since I brought it up, I did open that door, right? So, you know, one interesting thing, and we addressed this a little bit earlier when we talked about some of our, we put together a guide for faculty, which was very, I think, kind of bold and maybe silly, because we didn't really know, in some sense, exactly what was going to happen inside the MOOC, but we thought, okay, well, here's a great idea to do what we were talking about earlier and say, oh, good, here's an educational, or here's a framework for how to actually put together a class and materials and learning objectives and things like that. So we thought, okay, here's an opportunity for us to talk a little bit about what makes, you know, a great educational sort of intervention, right? So we put this guide out and we said to faculty, here's what we expect you or we expect you will need to do to make this a successful opportunity. We were right in a lot of ways, mainly in that they needed to plan ahead of time, but we also did not plan for as much interaction as there was in the class itself. We thought, okay, you put everything in there, you step away, all these things are going to happen, you just kind of keep an eye on it and correct the cruise ship if it goes off course, right? What actually happened was the faculty wanted to be involved. They wanted to go into the forums, they wanted to talk, they wanted to say, I see what you're saying, I see this perspective that you've brought to the discussion, and I want to comment on it. We thought maybe TAs would be the ones that did that, but the instructors were absolutely fascinated. And I used this stat this morning, but we had one instructor who allotted himself some time to go into his course each week and see what was going on. He ended up spending four times as much time in the class as he thought. He's got big dark circles under his eyes these days because he's like, I've spent all my time when I'm not actually here on campus inside this MOOC reading and interacting. There's also some other interesting things that are happening in terms of innovation with the way that interaction is happening, I guess. We had one instructor who thought of a great way to use a forum to actually deliver an assignment in the logic class that's been taught at Duke by Walter Stinnett Armstrong, who's actually team teaching it with Ram Netta, who teaches at UNC. They decided at one point that they wanted to do some sort of an interesting assignment that wouldn't necessarily be an easy thing to do with the tools that were inherent inside the platform that we use. So what they did was they said, let's go to the forum. It's a place where people interact, right? So it's a class about logic, reason, and argument. They said, okay, you construct a short argument in this forum, and what's going to happen is the other students in the class are going to come and they're going to vote your argument up or down, and the ones that rise to the top through that natural process, we, the instructors, will actually take those arguments and we'll record short videos where we talk about what worked with your argument and what didn't, and we'll put those up as part of the class. The students were like, oh my gosh, this is an opportunity to interact with the instructors. They went bananas. It was great. They loved it, and it's something they're not going to forget about that class, is they actually had an opportunity to interact with each other directly and with the instructors if they were lucky enough to make a good argument that actually got some comments from their peers. So I'll leave it at this.
I will be short. I just add one more thing besides a discussion forum. Our faculty use a Google Hangout, actually live chat with the faculty. So one of the faculty schedule Google Hangout biweekly, right? So even there's up to 10 participants, but a lot of people can only watch and through the YouTube. So it's going to very well. So some students said we never, from India, they never have chance to talk to on-campus faculty over there, but they have chance to talk to faculty here.
Surprising.
Yeah. So our first MOOC in April, a machine learning class, every class was a live broadcast on Ustream. And so the question was about the student-student interaction, both residential and the MOOC audience. So it was very interesting because if Caltech students weren't asking questions, the tech stream was just filling up with questions, and that would often trigger discussion in the class or have other residential students starting to ask questions. So that was great to see that this campus beyond the Caltech campus was asking questions. As far as the forums, what I've seen is a lot of, at least in the Drugs in the Brain class, a lot of personal stories as to why they're taking this class, what they're learning, how it applies to them personally and in their families, and why it's important for them to learn more about pharmacology and brain science. So that's been great. And then I mentioned before, you know, there's always, if somebody has a question, what's the number I heard today that if you ask a question in Coursera, it's answered by a peer student or a TA within 7 minutes. So that's pretty amazing. So, of course, you know, clarifying a point that's not clear. Coming back to the Caltech TAs really having to up their game and answering, you know, kind of different questions than they're used to. And our faculty have been stepping in to be part of the discussion and then being excited to be part of the discussion forums.
And one other element of interaction is the constant discussion about the course itself. And all of our faculty who have taught MOOCs, it seems like they're getting used to that sort of constant stream of feedback, which, again, as the Twitter feed points out, is this just something that should have happened a long time ago? Maybe. And yet, it's really great to see it happening for people now. And we could talk a lot about. And let me just say, too, we're all support units. We're all offices who are working to support what our institutions have decided to do. So, you know, I don't think I can defend MOOCs in any speaking about the gloves coming off. But we're kind of there with them and spending a lot of time right in the mix. So happy to hear your comments and thoughts about some of these questions as well.
Okay, so here's the tricky perspective. I'll do this so it's a bit more debatey, because this is a debate club. Two people come up to you. One says, MOOCs are the new Second Life. There's going to be a lot of talk about them, and then they're all going to go away because it was a huge waste of time. Another person says, MOOCs remind me of the conversation around online education about 12 years ago, and we all kind of know how that turned out. So what are your perspectives, especially regarding the Second Life thing, which I never really liked in the first place?
Just real quick, I mean, without going too, you know, without taking too much of your bait there, I hope that the things that you're hearing today will convince you that even though, you know, who knows? I don't think anybody, I know nobody. It's not about thinking nobody. Nobody knows the answer. It could very well turn into a Second Life type thing. It could disappear. It could fade off into oblivion. But I hope that the things that you're hearing, those of us who support education and the idea of doing education right and improving education when we can, I hope you're hearing that there are benefits that are coming out of this. So if it evaporates into the ether and disappears and becomes something that isn't something that we're using in 15 years, I know that at least the students who've been part of the courses that that have run so far or will have run by the time it evaporates, if it evaporates, and the faculty who have had an experience to teach like this are going to have been affected by what happened. So regardless of whether or not the technology itself and the actual the MOOC itself exists the way we see it now in 15 years, regardless of whether or not that's the case, I think there's obviously some benefits that are coming out of it that I hope everybody is taking advantage of. So.
You're talking about Second Life. I think a Second Life, only Second Life. For the MOOC, is a real life because it connect to the learner to the real world.
Yeah. Well, it's sad because I remember Second Life actually being really positive for some of our one of my previous institutions. We had a biology professor who taught biological principles on Genome Island, right? Because you couldn't do ethical research on sheep and change all their genetic code, or have students change their genetic code and in class, but you could do that on Genome Island, and we, you know, students had a really positive learning experience by having that. So I hate to say that Second Life was, you know, bad, even though it's kind of lost its shine, if you will. I guess I would say that hopefully what we're seeing is a shift in culture. Maybe I think George Siemens said recently on Twitter that a lot of times, particularly you're talking about Thomas Friedman, but you know, in general, we tend to mistake the
the evidence of the trend, the MOOC, for what it's actually really about, which is a change in thinking about connected learning and thinking about teaching and learning and what we're doing in our institutions. And I hope to see that that's actually the, maybe it's not about the technology, maybe it's not about the actual MOOC, but maybe it's about a culture of teaching and learning that continues to evolve at our institutions, and we think more deeply about it than we used to.
One reason that I hope they'll stick around long enough to realize one of their potentials, one of the potentials of the MOOCs, is the analytics piece. And we have yet to explore it because we're running to catch up and make them the success that they've been so far on our campus. But that's something that we're absolutely desperately curious about, the window into student behaviors and learning and success that they may provide. So that's something that we're hopeful about. I am, anyway.
Hi. Craig Roberts, also Duke University. I've heard some great examples that you've given of collaboration among large members of the class to guide the learning process. I think you were talking about, Walter, with the online forum and voting up or down the topic. I wonder if there's been any efforts by the platforms or the faculty to target collaborative learning strategies. And when I say collaborative, I mean under 100 and perhaps down near 10 individuals, and perhaps in a sustained fashion across the curriculum. And if so, any experiences that you've had with that?
At Stanford, we've been using a platform in addition to Coursera and in addition to a platform that we developed, an open source platform called Class2Go. We also have been using a platform called Venture Lab. And Venture Lab's entire premise is this idea of team-based learning. And so at the very beginning, students are assigned to small groups, and pretty much the entire class, you are doing group projects with that persistent group. You can either choose to have the groups made by some kind of algorithm, like people who said certain things on their initial survey get grouped with certain other people, or you can do it just you select the groups, or students select their own groups, which we've seen a lot of students start to, if you go that route, a lot of students will actually select people who have really good reputations from other projects, from other courses and things like that. So we are starting to see a lot of courses that benefit from team-based learning being run on platforms like Venture Lab. And what's interesting is that some of the courses that we've offered, they tended to be more kind of entrepreneurship-type courses. We've actually seen some companies, some real companies, spin off from these courses, so students working together on global issues, talking about it, coming up with real ideas, real solutions, and turning those into companies, startups, and things like that. So I think that has been pretty successful. You're the problem, man. That's.
So I'm Eric Orton from Boise State University. The question I have is about what can we do. Well, let me preface this. It seems to me like most of what I've read about MOOCs, the completion rate for those that come in is pretty abysmal. I've heard anywhere from like 75 to 90% don't end up completing the course. If I had a face-to-face or even an online course at my campus where 75 to 90% of the people flunked or didn't complete the course, that would be seen as a very, very severe, significant problem. Now, of course, those students, those who are taking courses at Boise State, they have made, even though we're a state school and stuff, they've made a fairly substantial, monetary investment in their education and things, so that may be part of that. And certainly one could argue that when you haven't invested as much maybe in the learning experience, that maybe that sort of, you don't have as much motivation to finish it out either if it's a course I'm taking for free or something. But I guess my question is, when you think about kind of that situation, that so many people that go into a MOOC don't finish it, if we think about kind of what MOOCs are being held up as having the potential to do for education, is that a problem that so many students don't finish the course? And if it is, what can be done to change that situation? How can we make sure that those students are more successful in completing the learning experience?
Well, just like with face-to-face courses at your university and online courses at your university where students are enrolled, completion numbers don't always give us the full picture. And I think that in particular with MOOCs, we have a significant number of what we call dropouts, although dropouts kind of a not a great term for the MOOC students who leave, or who, you know, we've actually been able to, some doc students at Stanford, the Lytics Lab group, they've been doing some modeling of behaviors within MOOCs, like what are people doing. We have a lot of people who drop out, who just kind of disappear. We have a lot of people who just what we call audit, right? They just kind of, they still look at the videos, they still maybe even read the discussion boards, but they don't post and they don't complete assignments. You have people who we call explorers who, you know, do some things, go away for a little bit, come back. So you have all kinds of different patterns of behavior, and it's really hard to say if somebody disappears or doesn't complete all the assignments of this course, it's hard to say that they actually didn't get something out of it. Right? So one of the things we're exploring is, can we identify learning outcomes that people might be coming to these MOOCs for, maybe small kind of incremental learning outcomes, that then you can say, well, maybe that person left after 3 weeks, but they accomplished that learning outcome as evidenced by, you know, this or that. So I think that getting a better sense for why people are coming to these MOOCs as part of usually their lifelong learning process really helps us to get a better sense of what they're leaving with also. And I think that's something we need to continue to explore in the data.
Good point. So how many of you in this room sign up one or more MOOC courses? And how many of you have completed the whole course? Yeah, only a few. Yeah, one. So a lot of people sign up, and just like you said, just for the exploring, or they have a different motivation. And in terms of the success, or do they learn anything? Some people could only watch videos and don't participate in any discussion board or don't do any homework. They still learn. Because people have a different motivations.
So there's a thread in Twitter where people are basically saying the panel doesn't have anybody who's apparently anti-MOOC. I'm wondering if the room does have anyone who's anti-MOOC, and if you'd be brave enough to stand up to the mic.
After you've heard what we've had to say, I hope you would be. We're not pro-MOOC, right? We're
you
just
know?
Giving
yeah.
you the experience we've had.
Thank you very much.
I'll be wait to be attacked. It seems to me, I mean, I thought that was great. You know, you said your professor got into the instruction and they're voting these things up, and now he's got dark circles under his eyes. And if I were somebody who was sitting in that professor's class paying for this pleasure of taking the class and knowing that all of his time and all of his effort is going to, oh, a free model to somebody who's not paying for the class, how much of that is detracting from what the university hired him or her to do?
Well, if you believe what we said, that the MOOCs are actually helping faculty to think about their teaching for once, then the logical conclusion would be that faculty member is actually now being more intentional about the way that they're spending time with students in their class.
With that one class, with the MOOC.
No, with the students in their
and we're hoping that goes forward because right. Yes, they are thinking about it. But in the time being, it's like an alternative certified teacher. The first time they teach, the people who suffer are the students in their classroom right now. They eventually get so everybody's really good and they are much better teachers. And I think they learn to use the tools better. But I just don't see how economically this can sustain itself. But I think they're good things.
So I think the point you're bringing up is speaks to how MOOCs are supported on our campuses and really where the funding is coming from, where the time is coming from, and the sustainable model of that is something we don't know. We frankly don't know. I mean, at our campus, we have an innovation and education fund that's helping to support some of the efforts to hire some TAs to help the faculty with some of the development that's going into these courses. Because of the way that our institution is structured, our faculty are making their own arrangements with their divisional deans, who are called chairs for us, about their time. And so that's something that, you know, that the institution writ large is not yet making any real judgment about. But it's a really valid question long term. Where's the time coming from? And then, of course, faculty life and the intellectual life is one that involves passion. It involves a spark of creativity. And would we say the same thing about someone, you know, staying up overnight to write that article, which I'm sure many people in the room have had that experience? Is that always a negative? Is it part of what we do? I think these are open questions, but very good ones. So I wanted to follow up. We're doing something in our economics class that we couldn't have done without the MOOC platform. It's this online stock trading. And you can't really do that with a class of 40 students, but with a class of 30,000 students, you now have this statistically significant number of inputs and results that really add to the learning and the outcome of that experiment. It also pushed the technology of building an online trading system for that many students in real time. But we wouldn't have been able to do that without that many students who are taking the course.
I hate to say this, actually, but I was so engaged in the debate that I lost track of time. It's now 4:30. Is there one quick question? Is it quick?
I'm not sure it's quick. Two things to think about, both of them sort of built around the word open, because there are two things I don't think people have really talked about. One is sort of who owns the material that both you're drawing from. You know, as I said, a lot of this stuff is, if it's coming from a textbook, you know, are the publishers, how are they handling that? Where is the material coming from? How are they handling copyright? And second of all, are they open in the sense that I can now take some of that material for myself, or are they, you know, as I said, are they going to have to stay as a individual course? The other question on sort of the open issue is the issue of learning analytics, where you're saying, like, well, we have all this data now. Who owns that data? And as I said, are you going to potentially be selling that? You know, one of my thoughts immediately is that, you know, the original MOOC sort of Norvig, you know, he's the vice president of Google. What's Google very good at? Turning analytics about people into money. And I sort of wonder about, as I said, is that what they're basically thinking about doing long term?
We have some courses that that don't use any journal or textbook information. It's all digital whiteboarding, and so there's not that issue. We are working with Coursera, with publishing houses, to deal with the copyright issues of using those materials in such an open way. Actually, every course we've done has been unique. You know, can we show this video? Is it considered fair use? That's still part of the pathway of defining, you know, how we move forward and yeah, what's happening there.
There's a big time thing going on at the back of the room. So, moderator.
Thank you, panel, for your participation.